on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Hi, if everybody can come in and get situated, we're going to try and get the meeting started. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Ryan. Hey. So a screwdriver walks into a bar. And the bartender says, "Hey, we have a drink named after you." And the screwdriver says, "You have a drink named Murray?" Thank you. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God and let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So if everybody's ready, we're going to start the meditation. So we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's up on the boards here. God. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I've asked Julio to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it's kind of important to know what one is. So bring up Julio.
I'm a little nervous, so I'm Julio. I'm an addict, alcoholic.
Hey, Julio.
All right, the spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in the Big Book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery for alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in nature of sudden and spectacular unheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God conscious, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, through frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomers are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner recourse, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honesty facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to meeting mode, or you can just turn them off because anybody that you need to talk to is right here. And tonight we have Marion doing her fourth session. We're all in for a treat tonight because every time Marion speaks, it's kind of like watching one of those spiritual experiences happening. We get to meet people in this life that you can tell just by looking at them that they walk with God, and Marion is definitely one of those people. So bring up Marion.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I like those new steps. It kind of feels like the Grammys. I should be like one of those ladies that fall down in a gown, because that's what I would do. The films you see on YouTube, the botches of embarrassing Grammy moments. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. Lighten up, Marion. No. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. I want to welcome anyone who's new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that from my first sponsor. Always, always, always to say that. And I don't always say that. But you know, when the hand of AA reached out to me and I felt welcome for the first time and I felt like it was home, it was everything to me, and it still is today. And so welcome. Don't hide in the corner. Reach out your hand if you feel alone. And please let us be there for you. Because when we can be there for you, we get to stay sober too. It's pretty cool how that works. And, step four, we've covered some ground over the last few weeks, and with the foundations of our recovery and step one, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And step three, to make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. And I was talking about this last week, that it seems as if when I do these series, that God goes live with me. And He has certainly gone live with step four with me today and this week. Not only with sponsees, but some things in my own life. It's interesting to me, step four is where we made a list of, how come I'm broken? Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And that step when I first went through it for the first time was so, so, so vital in my life. It's a turning point for a lot of people in recovery. Usually, Peter talks about, you want to lose a sponsee, get them to step four, and they're gone. And one of the things I find with sponsees a lot of times is you get them to step four and it's like, oh, well, I think you're just too busy for me. They want a new sponsor, or, I get too busy, or, just certain things like that. Because this fact-finding mission, this going inside and looking at ourselves, is a really scary place to go. What it means is we're going to get leveled. Our pride, we're going to get leveled. Our ego, this is where we come out the other side and know the truth of where we went in our alcoholism. And I know for me, just even the inventories I went through today, just for myself, I shared with the shoulder to shoulder some inventory I had, and that isn't step four, but that's immediately, and it's inventory, and there was some resentment, and there was some stuff going on in my life. I cannot stand one second feeling separated from God. I can't stand that feeling that, you guys, we are selfish and we're self-centered to the core. And resentment is, and anger is the dubious luxury of normal people. We can't afford it. It has the power to kill us. And I stand here 28 years sober, and I can tell you that sometimes those things can twist me up. Sometimes it's justifiable anger or certain things like that, guys. But ultimately, the biggest thing about all of it is, I need God. I need God. I needed God when I got here. I need God today. I need God in every breath I take. And I can't be afforded to be separate from you. And I can't be afford to be separated from God. I can't afford that. It doesn't mean God ever leaves. It doesn't mean God ever forsakes me. God's there, thick, thin, through and through. God's always there for me. Always, always, always. But when I lose that connection, I feel I don't have that connection. That's not a grounds and a territory I like to live in my life. And so many people can do the, they used to call it the 1-2-3 dance back in the day in the rooms of AA. 1-2-3, 1-2-3. They called it the 1-2-3, 1-2-3 dance, And I did that early in sobriety. I went to treatment. I went to one treatment center, and I'll speak. Most treatment centers do that. They take people through the the first three steps of AA. And it's kind of a treatment center style or whatever it is, I remember. And I sat on that for a bit, you know. I came to a point in my recovery. I think my first year of sobriety was I couldn't even believe I was sober. When they used to talk about the pink cloud and riding that pink cloud, and I was like, I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm going to have pie with the friends, and I'm drinking lots of coffee, and I'm cleaning ashtrays, and I'm going to another meeting. Then I found this fellowship and this home, and man, I was riding high, the goose hung high, you know, whatever. You know, I fell in love with a Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous first and foremost for me. And I rode that cloud for a long time. I rode it for a long time. And you know what? I'm not going to say I don't even think I've ever came off of it completely. Because my love for Alcoholics Anonymous goes so deep in my life. And I had this fourth step. I had a notepad and I was given some direction and I was told to write down anything that I was going to take to the grave. I was writing out all my written. I carried it everywhere I went. It was either in my handbag or it was under the seat of my car or everywhere I went, because God forbid somebody was going to see that. You know, somebody was going to see how I felt about other people. And you know, there came a point and there came a time in my sobriety where in that 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, a girl in the rooms and another one that I was working with, one of them was getting married. I ended up at this wedding reception and sitting on a four-step for a long time. And this is a year and a half of sobriety at that point. And guys, I went to this wedding and, you know, our big book talks about the strange mental blank spot. And I was at that place because I was sitting at that wedding. And I'm going to tell you what, I have no idea how it happened. But just like this bottle of water is in my hand right now, there was a glass of champagne in my hand. And I literally came to with that glass in my hand right here, this far away from my mouth. And I'm telling you, I have never been so petrified in my life. Like, I can remember that fear today like it was yesterday. And somehow, some way, you know, the big book talks about it. There will be a time and a place where you will see that the only defense from that drink will be a power higher than you. And I'm telling you that we will recoil from it like a hot flame. And I ran out of that place so quick. I ran out of that place so quick. And I went over to some friends' house, and we went down to Dry Dock, and we hung out that night, and I finished that inventory. But I'm going to tell you, I believe that to be true. It talks about that in our book. If we will miss this vital step, we may drink again. And I don't want to ever have that fear come back in my life again. I don't ever want to be like that. So even today, if a resentment comes up, or a fear comes up, or something that I don't want to run by somebody else, I know... I'm telling you, this morning, man, I had to share that inventory. And this afternoon, I called my sponsor. It went straight to voicemail. And I was just like, good. I made the effort. And then I said to Peter, it's like, you go do the talk tonight because I'm ticked off, you know. Poor guy. He lives with me. But we live with each other. We're alcoholics. I get to live together and it's beautiful. And it's real and it's live and it's beautiful. But I did text message one of my women, one of my shoulder to shoulders, one of my immediately's. And this woman, and Jeannie H, I love you. Polly P, I adore you. You were busy with one of your five, another sponsee, I'm sure, because that's what she does all day long. But I texted Jeannie and I didn't even want to call her. You know, I texted her, can I share some inventory with you? And immediately the phone rings. It's like, great, I'm not getting out of this. Because still, why? Why does that still happen? That still the phone is heavy to pick up. That it's still so hard for me to admit. She's going to think I'm crazy. She's going to think I lost it. Oh my God, she's going to think I should be better than this by now. You know, it's always all this should. And always how I should be better than this. You know, and it's this constant you know, battle in my own head of wow, you know, that I got to show up better than I am, that I got to show up better than an alcoholic. You know, and still I'm sitting there tonight and, you know, it's been, you know, if you have to do two inventories in one day, you know, I'm pretty wiped out. And I'm like, God, now I got to show up and I get to be vulnerable again. But you know what? That's what God's made me to do. And if somebody, one person gets something out of this tonight, that it's okay to just be real with somebody and that there's no arrival point, whether I'm 3 months sober, whether I'm 6 years sober, whether I'm 28 years sober, I need this fellowship. I need someone. Our big book talks about solitary self-appraisal seldom suffices. How does that work for me? You know, if I'm justifying and figuring out my inventory in my own head, how does that work out for me? How does that work out for any of us? Well, I've written a lot of inventory. Yeah, but have you shared it with anybody? You know, because quite honestly, my viewpoint, when I turn inward and I'm looking at my stuff, you know, first off, I want Jeannie to jump on my bandwagon and tell me, you know, yeah, that really sucked, you know. But no, that's not the way it goes when we run it by another alcoholic. Can you see, honey, where you were? And this is how her voice. I love her so much. She's a beautiful, God-fearing woman who loves this fellowship with her whole heart and treats me like a daughter. She's a precious woman. But she can call me out with a, oh, honey, do you think maybe you're afraid? Yeah, I might be, hon. I might be. Do you think maybe you're afraid? And I can hear her say that. 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. How do we know we have self-delusion? Well, if I'm letting that stuff chew me up and eat me up and stay inside of me, guys, I'm in a whole lot of trouble. And we just, I've got a sponsee in the back. I'm not going to say who that person is. But about, you know, running some inventory by me the other day. And what a thrill that is. When I can share my stuff with you, when I could share this stuff for the first time with someone and be able to look at myself. You know, I had a sponsee I was working with the other day. We did a 5, 6, and 7, and it was beautiful. And one of the things that became very, very, very clear to me, I think probably for one of the first times, she was having a really hard time working at on the fourth column of seeing where she was selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. Hard time seeing that and being able, like looking at the things that she had done, and just, you know, that morbid reflection and just hanging on to, oh my gosh, I did this and I did this and I did this and I did this, you know, and all the things that she had done. And it was so clear to me. But that was you before you had your relationship with God. You know, our big book talks about the 7 areas of self. The way we, you know, the rest of the world, you know, I even read a little 12 and 12 earlier this week. Didn't get hit by the truck, but, you know. You know, and it talks about those 7 areas of self, of which I always don't list them all, right? You know, pride, personal relations, self-esteem, security, ambition, pocketbook, and self and sex relations. You know, the rest of the world, we don't have a corner on the market on this, guys. We're not the, you know, normal people out there. They got some pride. Would you all agree? I mean, you know, those people on Wall Street or the woman with the, you know, the Botox things, or, well, you know, there's some pride going on, right? You know, they probably have trouble in personal relationships, you know, probably have some self-esteem issues, things like that. But our big book talks about, for us, these things, I don't know the exact word it talks about, but for us, when we're in our disease, these things are amplified. We've got them like off the charts. And that's a Marianism. That is not exactly how it says it in the book. But for us, really, If I, and so this is a thing that became very clear to me, is we're human, right? The world's human, the normal people out there are human. And we're human, but we're alcoholics, okay? So everybody, including, I'm just coming up with this right now. Say there's a little tiger cub in the forest, or not a forest, in the jungle. Forest. Okay, so what do we do? We're in danger. I'm in danger. I'm in danger. Somebody's threatening me. Somebody's threatening one of these areas of my life. And what would a cat do? It's like go into protection mode. Claws go up, you know, whatever. So what do we do? You know, you're coming at me. I got no God in my life. I got nothing protecting me. Nobody. It's me. It's me against the world. It's me against the world. How do I protect myself? I got no God in my life, right? I'm drinking, I'm drugging, people are threatening me, things are going on. So these are the ways that I can keep things at bay. My pride, oh, no one's going to see me look like this. No one's going to see, you know. Oh, my pride would say, suck it up, Mary, and go do a four-step talk and go give them a whole bunch of information instead of really what's going on in your own life. Somehow I just can't do that. So whatever. So it'll be messy. So my pride would say, no, Marion, just, you know, how you doing, Marion? Oh, I'm just fine. Everything's great. Didn't do two inventories today. And, you know, whatever. So pride is no one should see me this way. So these are the ways that, so somebody threatens me in a personal relationship. This relationship should look like this. You know, my daughter, I should be a good mother. I should show up for my daughter. That's what that relationship should look like. So my self-esteem, well, that's always in the whatever, you know. So I am, my first therapist at St. Joe's Hospital, 1989, she writes on this little note, and she goes, I want you to carry this on. I am enough. I want you to carry that everywhere. I am enough. You can't add to that. You can't take away from that. You're enough. I want you to take that with you. And self-esteem. So security. I need everybody around me to tell me that I'm going to be okay. I need, you know, what do I need for my security? What do I need for my ambition? I want freedom from this voice in my head that sometimes that wants to be critical. I need that freedom to be okay. My pocketbook, my money, my finances, my sex relations. A real woman should be like this. A real man should be like that. So as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking of, these are the ways that I can protect myself. These are the ways in my disease that I protected myself, that we protect ourselves, is with these seven areas of self that we can go, right? So, but as this flipped for her, as she was able to see it, you know, that was you without God, how you reacted to life without God. And the difference is, when I have God, I'm safe and protected in God's. If I've turned my will and I've turned my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, I can be free of this stuff. It doesn't mean I'm always going to be, because life happens, the world happens, things are going to trip me up, things are going to hurt these areas of my life. They're going to hurt these areas of my life. It's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it's fatal. That's two scary sentences to me. I mean, grave and fatal in the same sentence, kind of yucky, right? For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. So if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal people, normal men. But for alcoholics, these things are poison. A couple of places I take people, and I'm just going to talk about resentment tonight a little bit, and maybe a little bit about fear and all that. But a couple of things that I use, even just ongoing for women when they get in resentment, and when we can get into resentment. I like to take them to the sick man's prayer, which is on the bottom of page 66. This is our course. We realize the people who had wronged us were spiritually sick. And I had this thing going on in my life in Washington in my marriage, and I had some justifiable anger, and I was in danger. And I was put in a safe place, and things were okay. But what had happened was, at 15 years sober, I found myself so full of resentment towards this other person and justifiable anger. And what I came to was this place where I knew that I had to start praying for him, and I knew I needed to write inventory. But I was so justified. I was so justified for that anger. And two of the prayers that I work with, in the back of the book, there's freedom from bondage. And in the middle of page 552, there's a freedom from bondage prayer where we pray for someone for 2 weeks. Everything we want in our life to happen for them. Their health, their prosperity, and their happiness. And that ticked me off. Because I felt like, dude, he's going to get all this stuff, and it's going to be because I have these really great prayers, and it's going to happen for him. You know, that's going to really suck, and I'm going to sit here broke, and I'm going to be unhappy, and I'm not going to find the love of my life, which totally happened. Yay. And, you know, I'm, you know, all that's, because I was like, wow, you really think you're something, Marion. You know, I was like, I had God in my life. You know, I had this God, and I'm making these prayers. And but in the freedom from bondage prayer, it does give us a little, pray it when you don't even mean it. And I was like, yeah, cool, because I don't, you know. and I didn't mean it. I didn't. Mean it. I had to pray for the willingness to mean it. I had to pray, God, you know what, God, you, and that's the deal. You know, we think God is this like far off little, I said that about the robe and the crown last week. I'm sorry, God, but I say it again. I love you so much. But the deal is, God, you know, God is so real. And it's not like when we talk to God about our resentment, he doesn't know we're feeling it anyway. Hello. You know, he knows every single breath we take and what we say. So I would go to God and I would just say, you know, I don't mean it. And I really don't want to pray, but I know that I have to pray. So you're going to have to make me willing first. And that's the way it went for a while. And then it went to the prayer. And then I could mean the prayer. Then I could mean the prayer. And it happened. And then I love this one. I start stuttering. This is our course, the sick man's prayer. We realize the people who had wronged us were perhaps, this is so beautiful. The people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we don't like their symptoms and the way they disturb us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Okay. Not bad man, not mean man, not poopy man. Sick man, okay? Sick man and sick Marion. Anytime I'm full of resentment, anytime I'm full of this thing, I want to be the judge, I want to be the jury, you got to do what I want you to do. Anytime I'm there, I'm sick. Because I'm playing God and I'm thinking I know better than God. And guess what? I need to hear that for myself. Because this is where my heavy finger can go too. Point right back to me and what a loser I am and how. Who? Thank you, God. Who am I to judge me? You know, I had this friend that used to sit across me at the Northwest group, and his name was, what was his name? I can't remember. But he used to say, "Mary, God don't make no junk. You know, quit being so hard on yourself." And I would do that. I would just get so resentful and so towards myself. So see where they're perhaps spiritually sick, just like me. your shoulders kind of fall, right? I mean, you can't tell me that I'm the only person in here that had a resentment today. Anybody have a resentment today? Please help me out here, folks. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you. Nobody's glowing in the dark and floating out the door, so thank God. So we ask God to help us show them. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Cheerfully grant a sick friend. If you got somebody in the hospital, they're laying in bed, they just, I don't know, they had their bunions removed. You're not going to go like, get out of bed, you bunion loser. You know, I mean, it's not like, it's not, you sorry sucker, get up, you bunion in denial bunion person or whatever. No, it's like patience, pity, that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend, right? When a person offended us, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? Guess what? Oh, it gives us a little leeway there too. Save me from being angry, thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. Retaliate, argue with a bunion person. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. I love this line right here. This is the good one. It's like the other one. When we're not willing and we got to be praying to be willing. This one gives us another out. It says, we cannot be helpful to all people. It's like, yes, I don't have to help. I tried to help, but that wasn't my job. There was a moment where it felt like I was and then I wasn't. So what does this have to do with step four? It has to do with resentment and being free of resentment. Okay? We can't be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Okay? So the things we're going to list on paper in step four is our resentments. We're going to do an inventory on all our resentments. Okay? The way I have my girls do it, I'm just going to tell you some mechanics. A little bit, because I'm not a real mechanical girl. Well, I am when I give instruction, but not from here. So column one, person. Column two, cause. Flip over the piece of paper. This is how I have my girls do it. Line in the middle. Areas of self, pride. Personal relations. Self-esteem. What are the areas of my life that this is affecting? And column four. Column is where I'm at fault. Putting out of our minds what others had done. We looked for our own mistakes. And I'm telling you, back in the day, they used to call this the turning. You know, I've taken some girls through this inventory and fifth steps or whatever. And where it's just like, yeah, that SOB, ooh, yeah, you know, and we're just all, yeah, but where are you at fault, you know? This inventory is ours, not theirs. Then we're going to go into fear. Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Dr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer and the wife. This short word. And here's me, all of us. The short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was the evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. The fabric of our existence. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. Fear brings us gosh. I'm talking to Jeannie today and I'm talking about fear. And I'm thinking about all this misfortune that this fear was bringing me. We felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We review our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Why are we afraid? Little dude, little tiger in the jungle. Thank you. Self-reliance. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed? Like, that's it. I want to protect myself. I go, because automatic pilot isn't to go, oh, holy God, help me through this. No, it's like the holy crap hit the fan. And so I'm going to protect myself. What can I do to protect me right now? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made it as cocky, it was worse. These next two paragraphs I really want to read. So perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now, here it is, exactly what I was describing. For we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? Sometimes it's a while to get back there. Sometimes it's like, whoa, that was a crazy ride I went on. You know, and fear hijacks us. Ego hijacks us. Pride hijacks us. Resentment hijacks us in our walk. You know, it does. It just, we get hijacked by that stuff, guys. We're prey to misery and depression. You know, it's like we're walking around with tag on our back. Like, we're it. Misery, depression, go get Kathleen. You know, it's like, you know, it just does. We're tagged. I love this next paragraph. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. You know, it talks in our book about that we cease fighting anyone and anything. That's way down in step 10. But man, you guys, I don't know about you, but I have fought my way through life. I've fought my way through life, and a lot of it's fancied and not even real. I can fight my way out of a paper bag. It's like, it's only a paper bag. You know, it's like, come on, Marion. What are you afraid of? It's a paper bag. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us to be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. There's a bunch about sex inventory. I'm not going into that. Read it with your sponsor on 68 and 69. Oh my God, I'm talking myself happy. Thank God for inventory. I'm going past that. I really do have to skip that. I'm too shy for that. Okay. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written down a lot. We've listed and analyzed our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and their futility and fatality. Guys, fatality. What you're going to find in this stuff is like the guy, the girl, and I'm just to give you a little tidbit about what it can look like next week if you come back for step 5 or if I scared you out of here. I hope not. But man, I had a super amazing experience when I got to what happens next week. You know, I can tell you that when I became separated from the woman that I was when I drank and I drugged and drank a lot and different forms of alcohol, when I became free from that woman to become who I am today, I can still look back and go, wow, I'm no longer that woman. And even though there might be days that trip me up and there might be things, there's still something in me. You know, the deal is to have this connection with God that's strong enough that I can fall back into pride and I can fall back into fear and I can fall back into resentment. But it's like a baby with a poopy diaper, you know, it's only warm so long. And it's like, I got to get out of that thing quick. You know, I can't afford to stay in that place. And I know that because I've had enough time with God that I know that the warm, cozy, cushy feeling that I have in my relationship with my Creator, that's raw and real and vulnerable and beautiful. And thank God for friends that pray for me in the back of the room with me. Karina saved me tonight because I was too late for that room. But, you know, it's like God just gives me these people that are there to just catch me when we start falling. And that's why it's so important for us to have that vulnerability with each other, to be real with each other, to go, you know, it would be a really... This is what you have tonight in me. This is me, you know. And it might have been it might be a little messy tonight, but it would have been a whole lot messier if I was up here and I was going through some mechanics and I didn't tell you what was really going on in me, because then it wouldn't be from my heart. And oh, actually, it would still be. I don't know what it would be, because I don't, whatever. So. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written down a lot. We've listed and analyzed our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. I already read that. So we've commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. For we look on them as sick people. Says it again. We've listed the people we've hurt by our conduct, and we are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you've already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. Thus being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And the deal is, you guys, my sponsor has done a whole lot of work with chronic relapsers and things like that. And one of the things that happens for us when we relapse is somehow the pride builds up, the ego builds up. And this is always a constant leveling of our pride, a constant leveling of our ego. You know, I want to come here today and I want to be a humble servant of God. I just want to be a spoke in the wheel. I just want to be a woman of grace and dignity. And so I hope you heard a little bit of that tonight. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Let's give Marion another hand. And we're going to bring up Heather to do the secretary's report. So welcome, Heather.
Thanks, Ryan. Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Heather.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Gary to come up and to read the recovered statement.
I call it Gary.
Hey, Gary.
We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presence of conflict to some alcoholics, if we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. 1940s style big book sponsorship from forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25 sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone that needs a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. The Big Book Study starts at 7:15. We have some other cool things going on in AA. AA's Got Talent on Saturday. The 40th Big Book Seminar, Joe and Charlie. Some Waves of Serenity conference. And we're trying to send all the Jersey people back to Jersey. So we've got this conference for you guys. We also have some CDs, mugs, large print big books, the little red book, and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. And we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone again to our Monday night Big Book Study on Monday night. I just want to remind everyone that there's a 75-foot no-smoking or vaping zone in front of the doors. So when you leave, there's some smoke buckets set up down on that side. Yeah, thanks for your cooperation. And for those who wish to thank Marion, just please line up down the center aisle. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Who can bring us from shame to grace? Thank you. See you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you laughing, ba 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 ba, when you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope the world smiles.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.